Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Suta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was free from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Please repeat after me. Sri Suta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As mentioned in our introduction, there is a need for the science of Krishna in human society, for all the suffering humanity of the world. And we simply request the leading personalities of all nations to take to the science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society, and for the good of all the people of the world. End quote. So it is confirmed herein by the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. In India, the people hanker after what? Rama Rajya. Because the personality of Godhead was the ideal king, and all other kings or emperors in India controlled the destiny of the world for the prosperity of every living being who took birth on the earth. Herein, the word prajaha is significant. The etymological import of the word is, quote, that which is born, end quote. For the earth, on the earth, there are many species of life, from the aquatics up to the perfect human beings, and all are known as prajas. Lord Brahma, the creator of this particular universe, is known as Prajapati because he is the grandfather of all who have taken birth. Thus, praja is used in a broader sense than it is now used. Kings represent, a king represents all living beings, the aquatics, plants, trees, reptiles, birds, animals, and man. Every one of them is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, as explained in Bhagavad Gita 14:4. And the king, being the representative of the Supreme Lord, is duty bound to give proper protection to every one of them. This is not the case with the presidents and dictators of this demoralized system of administration, where the lower animals are given no protection, while the higher animals are given so-called protection. But this is a great science, which can be learned only by one who knows the science of Krishna. By knowing the science of Krishna, one can become the most perfect man in the world. And unless one has knowledge of this science, all qualifications and doctorate diplomas acquired by academic education are spoiled and useless. Sorry, any PhDs out there. PhD. Uh-huh. What's it called? Permanent humility deficit. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew this science of Krishna very well, for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualifications of administering the state. The father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the son, But that does not mean that the father has lost a qualification to be a father. A father is always a father because he always has the good of the son at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become a better man than himself. Therefore, a king like Maharaja Yudhisthira, who was the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially human beings who have better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna. But everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. Srila Prabhupada is using an understatement, trifles. I think it's I have personal experience, it's more than trifle. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens. For as personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. He conducted the administration on that principle and not on the rakshashi, demonic principle of sense gratification. As an ideal king, he had no personal ambition and there was no place for sense gratification because all his senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes the partial service to the living beings who form the part and parcels of the complete whole. Those who are busy rendering service to the parts and parcels, leaving aside the whole, only spoil time and energy. As one does when watering leaves of a tree without watering the root. If water is poured on a root, the leaves are enlivened perfectly and automatically. But if water is poured on the leaves only, the whole energy is spoiled. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the parts and parcels of the Lord, the living beings, under his careful administration, were perfectly attended with all comforts in this life and all progress in the next. That is the way of perfect management of state administration.
Amagyana timarandasya mananjana shavakara chakshur unmilatam yena tasmai sri gurave namah. I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes to the knowledge I offer my respectful obeisances unto him.
So in this verse, I'll just repeat the verse. Sri Suta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was free from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. So at this point, this verse says, he had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. Near the beginning of the Vanaparva in the Mahabharata, there was a discussion between Draupadi and Yudhisthira. She was a little bit miffed, you could say, a little bit peeved to have to move from the palace in Indraprastha to live in the forest. You know, you can imagine it was a little bit dusty. So she was, you know, she was saying, Yudhisthira, what is the good? You are Dharma, you're always following Dharma. What did it get you? Look, we're living in the forest. So it appears that Dharma is not very useful. Those who didn't follow Dharma, they are living in the palace. We're living in the forest. So what is the good of this Dharma? She went on like this. She was speaking in a very upset way. You can imagine. Imagine if you had to move from a palace into a small apartment, what to speak of, how upset the house life would be, right? So she was living in the forest. Now, of course, in reality, the real reason she was angry was because she didn't like to see her husband's life. But anyway, she was speaking this way. So then Yudhisthira, he said, to her, you know, you spoken very nicely, using very elevated words, but what you're speaking is atheism. I don't follow Dharma to get a result. I follow Dharma because that is what you do. You follow Dharma because it's your duty. Not, I didn't follow it so that I could become the king. I didn't follow it so that I could have a palace. I didn't follow it so that I could get wealth. I did it because it is Dharma. It is my duty to do it. Okay? That is why I did it. She was defeated. She always was bringing her and Bhishma Dev, they were itching for a fight with the you-know-who. So they were always trying to instigate Yudhisthira to tell them to attack. You know, the only reason they weren't attacking because Yudhisthira said no. You know, Arjuna, the twins, they kept quiet. They weren't taking sides. They were just listening to Yudhisthira. But Draupadi and Bhishma and Bhima, they were always trying to instigate Yudhisthira to, you know, let loose the dogs of war. But they'd always give some principles of Dharma, but sub-principles. And then Yudhisthira would always give the conclusion, and they would have to keep quiet, defeating them. So that's the point. He was not doing his duty for any material, for any personal ambition. He was doing his duty for the sake of duty, and particularly, as explained in this verse, he was doing it to please Krishna. So in Varnashram Dharma, there's three types. There's Suric Varnashram, which is what's happening now. Then there's ordinary Varnashram, which is what was prevalent at that time. And then there's Daivi Varnashram. Krishna explains Daivi Varnashram in the Bhagavad Gita. Do we have Bhagavad Gita here? Can we get Bhagavad Gita? Anyway, in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in a nutshell, he explains what is Varnashram in three verses. One verse for the Brahma duties for Brahmanas, one verse for Kshatriyas, one verse for Vaishyas and Sudras. Then he explains that now I will explain to you how a person can become perfect, how a person can reach the ultimate destination. Then he says, if a person does his duties simply according for my pleasure, then he will reach the highest destination. 18th chapter. There we go. He says in verse 45, by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. He just explained Varnashram in a nutshell. Then he says, every man can become perfect. Now, please hear from me how this can be done. By working for the by worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. And in the first sentence of the second paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Rishikesh, the master of the senses. So we should consider that we're all, no matter who are, you know, whether whatever we're doing, whether we're a husband or a mother or a wife or an employer, we're actually working for Krishna. That's Daivi Varnashram. That we do our duty to please Krishna. Then, if we do it in that way, then it doesn't matter what difficulties there may be. Because sometimes, as we probably have found, that sometimes it's not easy to execute one's duties. Because it's seldom in the material world are conditions ideal. In fact, if it's an ideal situation, it's like makes the news or something. It's such a rare thing. Most of the time, it's not ideal. But still, we have to perform our duties. And the less ideal it becomes, the more difficult it is to perform our duty. And then sometimes it's a desire, then we won't want to do it. But if we think that's the whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is that, right? Because Arjuna, he was a fighting man. He liked the fight. He had killed tens of millions of warriors. Navita Kavachas. Tens of millions of them. Powerful asuras. What to speak of, you know. So fighting, that was, for him, that was child's play. He liked to fight. But now, the situation is not ideal. Now he has to fight against, he has to kill his grandfather. He has to kill his guru. Not ideal. But still, so Krishna says, you do your duty, but you do it for me. That's Daivi Varnashram. You do your prescribed duty, but you do it for me. Don't do somebody, he wanted to leave. Arjuna wanted to leave. He wanted to go and become a beggar. He wanted to go live like a Brahmin, a mendicant. Somebody else's duty. This was put into his mind by Sanjaya. Sanjaya came and said, you should, why kill all your family members? What's the good? You should just, better to give up. And Krishna defeated Sanjaya. And now Arjuna is repeating the same argument, and Krishna is defeating him again. So, most of the time it's not going to be easy. But we'll have a tendency to want to give up our duty if it's for our own gratification, or for somebody else, for some family member. We might want to, what's the point? But if we think we are doing this to please Krishna, then we can maintain detachment, and we know that whatever the situation is, we will make spiritual progress because we are doing it to please Krishna. So a mother can think, it's a very messy baby, but I'll change the diaper to please Krishna. Because that's her duty. Her duty as a mother is to take care of the baby. So you can go home back to Godhead by changing your baby's diapers if you think, I am doing this, I'm doing my duty as a mother to please God. Father, husband, they also have duties. Father has to protect the children. Husband has to the best of his ability, has to provide for his family, has to protect his wife. Protecting doesn't just simply mean he's a bodyguard. Protecting means he has to control the wife. It's like a mother protects the children. That means don't do this, do that, don't play with that boy, play with this boy. You know, so much control. Mothers are controlling it. So it's similar. Husband has to control the wife. Don't talk to that lady. She's a gossip. Like this. But also the husband has to know Shastra. He has to teach. He has to be able to guide, not just protect the physical body, protect the emotions of the wife, protect the intellect of the wife, spiritually. Just like the mother does the same thing. The mother is the Adiguru. She's the Adiguru. To the baby, mother is God. Right? Atru Deva Bhava. So the mother, with her breast milk, she's nourishing the body of the child. But with her love, she's nourishing the emotions of the child. She's the first teacher. She nourishes the intellect of the child. And she should also be able to nourish the soul of the child by her spiritual instructions, which she gets from her, which she got originally from her father and mother, and which she also gets from her husband. Because the duty of the husband is to, that's why it says, one should not become a mother or a father or a husband unless one can deliver one's dependent. So in a God-centered civilization, a God with a worldview is that we should leave this material world, then this is the setup. Krishna is the Rasa Raja. He is the king of relationships, of tasting rasa. That is why he created Varnashram. So that relationships can be expressed. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, there's Varnashram. Krishna is a cowherd boy. His father is the king of the Vaishyas. His father has to pay taxes. You know, he has friends who are Brahmins. Even in the spiritual world. Otherwise there won't be this exchange. There has to be a Grihastha ashram, otherwise how you can taste Parakya Ras? Even Parakir, even to have Parakir Ras means there has to be Grihastha Ashram. And of course, Mother Nanda and Father Nanda and Mother Yashoda, they, unless there was Grihasthas, how they could, everything is there. Krishna created that way. Created this so that he can taste different relationships using Varnashram. So here we see the Maharaj Yudhishthira, the soul wants to express its love, his love to Krishna. So how to do that? So Maharaj Yudhishthira, through his agency as being the emperor, he utilized his prescribed duty as the emperor to express his love for Krishna. He did his duty to please Krishna because he loved Krishna. He loved Krishna. He would not deviate. He did everything according to Krishna's instructions. Only one time, when Krishna told him to lie, he hesitated. Otherwise, he was always did everything. And then he also learned his lesson. But we have to learn. We want to express our love for Krishna. So how to do that? So Krishna has explained how to do that. That's why he's created Varnashram, so that we can do that. It's not that we can just simply make up our own ways of expressing our love, bhakti yoga, by making up some way. Because Rupa Goswami specifically has told us, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Binim Vina Akantiki Harer Bhakti Utpatyai Bhakalpite, that bhakti, which is not according to the Shrutis and the Smritis and Purana and Itihasas, it simply creates a disturbance in the society. It creates a disturbance. There's so many, we already have enough disturbances. So Krishna, he knows how things should be. Even if somebody is a Mahabhagavat, somebody, if we were following Bhagavad Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma is open to everybody. Everyone can follow Bhagavad Dharma. Anyone can follow Bhagavad Dharma. Male, female, even animals. We have Garuda, Hanuman, they're following Bhagavad Dharma. So that's open to everyone. What's Bhagavad Dharma? What are the nine processes of Bhagavad Dharma? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Sakyam, Dasyam, Atman Nivedam. Anyone can do that. But unless you were doing that 24 hours per day, then you have to engage with the material energy. So how to engage with the material energy? You're going to speculate, or you're going to, Krishna already figured it out. He calls it Varnashram, Dharma. That's how you engage the material energy, through, according to your psychophysical conditioning, material designation. You have prescribed duties, you do them, offer them to Krishna. Because not everyone can do Bhagavad Dharma 24 hours a day. Try it. It's not so easy. Prabhupada had one god brother. His name was Kinchana Krishna Das Babaji. I met him. He's a very jolly person, always chanting, just like that baby. He's chanting very loudly. He was always chanting. I met him one time in Calcutta. He came to the temple around 1980, just at Prasadam time. And he was just laughing like a little boy, though he was like about 80, giggling, laughing. Haribol, jive, like this. Always. So they brought him at the Prabhupada's room to give him prasadam. And didn't like it. He just came out and he squeezed between a couple of brahmacharis, and he wanted to take prasadam with the brahmachari, with the boys. Because what's the point? What's the fun of taking prasadam alone? There's no rasa. So he was just jolly laughing at it. So he was at Prabhupada's sannyas initiation. So when Narayan Maharaj was doing the sacrifice and he was chanting all these Vedic mantras, like we hear from next door, all these Purusha Sukta and there's different suktas, Pancha Sukta, there's this Sukta, that Sukta, but Krishna Babaji was chanting Mahamantra. So Narayan Maharaj said like that. Srila Prabhupada was standing and he was going like this. More Mahamantra.
So the story of Krishna's Babaji was that when he joined the Gaudiya Math, he didn't want to do anything. Didn't want to clean the pots, didn't want to sweep the temple, nothing. Didn't want to peel potatoes. All he did was chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. The temple managers were getting upset. This man is lazy, doesn't want to do anything. So they wrote the Bhakti Siddhanta. You have a problem case, you know. He doesn't listen to the temple authorities. You ever heard that? Doesn't want to listen to the temple authorities. So they wrote the Bhakti Siddhanta. When he Bhakti Siddhanta replied, he says, we want more men like this. He's always chanting Hare Krishna. Put ad in all the papers that we will give free room and board to anyone who chants Hare Krishna 24 hours per day. So they did. The 64 branches of the Gaudiya Math put in ads in all the newspaper in their locality. We will give free room and board to anyone who chants Hare Krishna 24 hours per day, 7 days a week, 365 days per year. So they got a few applicants. None of them lasted more than 2 or 3 weeks. Then everybody could understand Krishna's Babaji. He was a Mahabhagavat. He was getting taste from chanting the holy name. So unless you can do that, get 24 hours engaged in one of the 9 processes, either all of them or some of them or at least one of them, then we have to engage with the material energy. And that means Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram. Bhakti Siddhanta was he toured extensively promoting Daivi Varnashram. He wanted it because he could see that the Gaudiya Sampradaya had become very corrupted shortly after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya. The Gaudiya Sampradaya became corrupted because of these apasampradayas. So many sahajyas, things like that, who were taking things cheaply. So much loose association with women like that. They were Babaji's. At the time when he went to get the body of his Guru Maharaj, Gorkhasura Das Babaji, because all the other Babaji's wanted his body, so that they could make they could have his samadhi, and then they could charge money, tickets, or use it for raising funds. So, Bhakti Siddhanta said, he was still a brahmachari, he had not taken sannyas yet. He said, no one can touch his body, can take his body, unless they have not had illicit sex for at least 1 year, or 6 months, 3 months, 1 month, 1 week, last night, since last night. And so the constable, police constable was there, said, what proof will you accept? How will you know if they're telling the truth? He said, I'll just accept their word for it. And the constable was astonished when one after the other, all the other so-called Babaji's left the room, because they were not Babaji's. They were not following that. Babaji's are Paramahamsa sannyasis. So Bhakti Siddhanta, he toured through, but he went to all the holy places, you know, Udupi, Srirangam. He in Sri Purambadur, he learned from a Sri Vaishnava sannyasi all the rituals, everything, how to do Tridandi sannyas. Because before Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, from the time of Lord Chaitanya, there was only 3-4 persons who took Tridandi sannyas. After that, it was all Babaji. There's a few, like, I think Gadadhar Pandit, he became a sannyasi. And I think Prabodhananda Saraswati, he also became a sannyasi. I think one Krishna Mishra, the son of Advaita Acharya, he also became a sannyasi, Tridanda sannyasi. But that's very few. They all became Babaji's. So it became degraded. So he reinstituted this, you know, to keep things on a pure platform. Srila Prabhupada said that why he wasn't impressed by sadhus. His father would bring so many sadhus every day to bless, to feed them, give them some prasad, you know, and get him to bless his son. But when it came time, he had seen so many sadhus, when it came time that his friends wanted him to meet Bhakti Siddhanta, he didn't want to go meet him, because I've seen so many sadhus. Why was that? Because Prabhupada on several occasions escorted his father to deliver ganja and charash and opium to these so-called sadhus. So he was not impressed. But Bhaktisiddhanta said, he is the one who taught us no tea, no coffee, no what to speak of, charash and opium. Purity is the force, the importance of this. So Bhaktisiddhanta was very much encouraging the use of he was very much pushing this daily varna ashram as the pure, the, you know, not according to birth but according to the person's actual, you know, karma and guna, like this. And Srila Prabhupada also, because he's carrying the mission. You know, why did we have to understand what Srila Prabhupada's mission was? We have to understand what Bhaktisiddhanta's mission was. Bhaktisiddhanta, that was one of his major objectives, was to establish Daivi Varnashram. And Srila Prabhupada also said toward the end of his life that I've only accomplished 50% of my mission. Now the rest is Daivi Varnashram. Because it is even in the spiritual world, that is what is being practiced. So even if one was a Babaji, even if one is practicing Bhagavad Dharma continuously, then before one can go back to Goloka, you just can't go back to Goloka. What happens? What has to happen? Anybody read Krishna book? What does it say? You have to take birth. You have to go to some planet, some universe where Krishna is having his pastimes, and then you have to take further training. You have to go to Gokuladam in some other universe and take further training. You have to get trained, otherwise you won't fit in. You know, you won't fit in very well in Goloka Vrindavan. You know, you don't know what is left, what is right, what is up, what is down, because you have no training. You won't know how to churn butter. You won't know how to do anything. You won't know what's the front end of the cow, what's the back end of the cow. How are you going to fit in? You have to have training. If this doesn't come by magic. You know, Krishna is a practical person. He trains. He had to be trained to be a cowherd boy. Right? His father trained him, sent to take care of the cows. So the same thing. Even if somebody, who became the gopis? Some of the gopis, who were they in their previous lives? They were the Shutiganas. When Lord Ram met the renunciates in the forest, and they became gopis in their next lifetime. So to fit into that realm, that spiritual realm, we have to know our part and how to deal with it. So we have to know, so to practice in this lifetime, we have to know what is our prescribed duties, and we have to we know them by, not by speculation. Srila Prabhupada clearly stated in the end of the Bhagavad Gita that religion without philosophy leads to sentimentalism and or fanaticism, but philosophy without religion leads to speculation. And by religion, he means dharma. So speculation is a very dangerous thing. I mean, how dangerous is speculation? Let's put it this way. Marx and Engels speculated, right? They created a communist philosophy. How many millions have died because of that? Tens, they don't even know how many million people died. They just go, somewhere between 50 and 100 million people died because of that philosophy. Now, if it had been a successful philosophy, well, you could say, well, that's just the cost of, you know, the cost of success. But it was a failure. So tens of millions of people died, and it was a failure. But that's where speculation gets you. Why even speculate? What's the need to speculate? Krishna has already given it to us. So dharma. So philosophy without dharma leads to speculation. So we might know Krishna is God. We're not the body, we're the soul. We're meant to serve Krishna. So how should we serve Krishna? We serve Krishna according to dharma. Either through Bhagavad Dharma or through Varnashram Dharma. So for most people, Varnashram Dharma is the easiest way, because like as the example of Krishna's Babaji, it's very difficult for most people to engage in that way 24 hours a day. So we should learn very carefully what our prescribed duties are, and then, like Arjuna, do them, or like Arjuna and, in this case, Yudhisthira, use our prescribed duties as a medium to express our love for Krishna. In this way we will become perfect, and we will make advancement. And if we are lucky, then we'll go back to Goloka Vrindavan. We want to go, right? We all want to go there. Very good. See, right here is right there on the front cover of the book. Goloka. On one half is Krishna Vrindavan Dham. The other half is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. So you have a chance. Either way, that's where we want to go. So, any questions or comments? Now, don't wait till after the class, which is normally what happens. Everybody then asks me questions. But if you can have a question. You can, if you're shy, you can write it on a piece of paper and give it to somebody, and then they can give it to me. Right? Say again.
Who were gopis in their previous life?
Well, different gopis and gopas. They were different persons. They were devotees. Like in one case, they were the Shrutiganas. They were rishis who were living in Dandakaranya forest. Let's explain. They were, when they saw Lord Ram, they were stunned by his beauty, and they all wanted him to be their husband, though they were men. But they were realized, they were in male bodies, but they wanted. So in the next lifetime, they took birth as gopis in Krishna Lila. But not all gopis were those Shrutiganas. They were different, from different places. They come from one universe, so different universes they may have come from. Of course, some gopis are in the eternal Lila of Krishna. Not all gopis are being trained up. To go, some of them are already there. Like Radharani is the main gopis are constantly with Krishna, but there's so many gopis, there's, you know, millions of gopis. He's got a very elaborate training program. Anyone else? Alright, one question over here. Yes. Can we give him a microphone? Yes. Yes. I'm not quite catching the question. Well, that was their wives, Sakya Rasa, and the gopis were Parakya Rasa. They were his wives, and they were the other ones are his girlfriends. But even to have, of course, for Krishna everything is sattvic, everything is pure. But Parakya Rasa, there is some sweeter taste because there's some hint of illicitness, actually illicit. But how can it be illicit unless there is wives, Grihastha Ashram? It can't, you know, if that didn't exist, if that concept of having Grihastha Ashram wasn't there, then there would be, then Parakya Rasa doesn't exist. It wouldn't exist, would it? So that is why Krishna created. Just like Krishna created seven notes, musical notes. From that, everything is there. All music just comes from that. So just as from the family unit is a microcosm of all of society. So all the relationships in the family unit, they reflect in society. So if the family unit breaks down, all of society breaks down. That is what's happening today, that there is a massive breakdown in family units, and therefore this is creating social chaos. We have a question. When things are not ideal, how should one continue? Well, that depends upon the context. I mean, that's a very loaded question. the context would be important. I mean, and also ideal. To what level is it ideal? I'm not, you know, how much is it diverted from ideal? Is it, you know, very much diverted, or is it just a little bit off? That will also depend. We have to, in the main thing, though, is in the case of Arjuna, things were definitely not ideal. And that's, we take his as an extreme case, or even the case of Yudhisthira. A very difficult situation, living in the forest for 12 years, then living in incognito for another year, extremely difficult. But how did they survive? They did it. They followed their Kshatriya Dharma to please Krishna. They took on every austerity simply so that Krishna would be pleased. Arjuna, he fought a war. Almost everyone was killed. His own son was killed, murdered. His own son was murdered. And then his other sons, the five sons of Draupadi, they were all murdered in their sleep. It didn't stop Arjuna from doing his duty. There was one time in Mauritius, Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and some Mauritian person was saying, what is the good of education if the student doesn't follow it? You know, and Prabhupada explains, with Arjuna, he heard the Gita, but then when the Abhimanyu died, he became, he disintegrated. He started crying and this and sobbing and this and that. So he was not a good student. And Prabhupada said, what do you mean? He started getting on the man's case. Not that the devotee has no feeling, but he had promised Krishna he would do his duty, and he did his duty. Nothing stopped him from doing his duty. It doesn't mean the devotee has no feelings. Of course, he had some attachment to his son. Who wouldn't have attachment to their own son, to his wife? No. Of course. The Pandavas loved Draupadi very much. When they were going to Gandamandana, after walking for two miles, she fainted. The Pandavas immediately. There was four Pandavas. Arjuna was in Indraloka. So they immediately, one Pandava on each of her foot, another one was massaging her. They were massaging her body. They loved Draupadi very much. So it's not that they, I'm a devotee. It's just impersonalism. We don't care for other people. That becomes impersonalism. Of course, there's a devotee. Krishna says in the Gita that the devotee is kind to everyone. We should be kind to everybody, but not our family. Everybody is now in feminism is getting into ISKCON. Everybody is the wife's Prabhu except her Prabhu. Everybody is our Prabhu, but not my Prabhu. He's not my Prabhu. Oh, everybody else is, but not him. So that, it doesn't. It becomes impersonalism. We should care. They're devotees of Krishna also. Krishna will not be pleased. When Lakshman was injured, I mean, Ram was certainly very disturbed. When Krishna saw the imaginary figure of Vasudeva with his head cut off, the head of Vasudeva, he became very despondent, very upset, because he loves his father. Of course, he understood it was an illusion of the asuras. But he loves his devotees. Krishna also loves his devotees. It's not just a one-way street. Krishna is very concerned about his devotees. And one time, when Ramanujacharya was, after the death of Yamunacharya, he wasn't quite sure what he should do. So he asked Kanchipurna some questions, six questions. There were several questions. One of the questions was, what happens to your devotee if at the time of death he's not able to remember you? Because I can assure you, the time of death is a very difficult situation.
for most people it will be very painful and very difficult, and you may not be able to think of Krishna. So he asked, what happens to your devotee if he's not able to think of you at the time of death? So Devaraj replied, then I will think of him. So Krishna is not an ingrate. He remembers what the devotees have done for him. So if it's not an ideal situation, then we have to it's never going to be that with it. Well, when things are not ideal, I mean, that means being ideal is so rare that the question almost doesn't make any sense, because it's never going to be in an ideal situation, so you have to continue anyway. Because practically never is it going to be an ideal situation. So you still have to go on. That's the material world, it's a struggle. It's a very difficult place. Very difficult place. Full of struggle, full of pain, full of death, full of many unpleasant things. Things seldom go right. If it goes right, that'll be extremely rare. So we still have to continue. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. If you want to do it, it can be done. That's what it says. That spiritual life, there is no material impediment which can stop it. I'll give you an example. A material example. This is a true story. One man, I heard it on the news, I think it was 1997. They reported how a man in France, a reporter, a journalist, had died at the age of 41 as a result of suffering a stroke 18 months earlier. The stroke left him completely immobilized, totally paralyzed. He couldn't speak. The only thing he could control was that he could blink his left eye. That's all he could do. But the news recast continued. After he got the stroke, he wrote a book of 150 pages. How is it possible? All he can do is blink his left eye. But this man was very determined. With a friend, somehow he communicated, the friend held up a board with the alphabet on it. His friend put his finger near a letter, and when he came to the right letter, the man blinked. So he wrote a book, one letter at a time, one blink at a time. He was determined. So if you are determined, you will be successful. In the beginning of the Shabdaparva of the Mahabharata, Yudhishthira was discussing with Arjuna and Krishna about having a Rajasuya sacrifice. And there was the difficulties to do a Rajasuya sacrifice. And Krishna praised him of the whole situation, you know, this obstacle, that obstacle. So then Yudhishthira asked Arjuna about his opinion. And Arjuna said, I've learned that there are three principles involved in success. The three principles of success are, one, concentration of mind. Two, persistent effort. And three, the grace of God. But you have to do your part first. You can't win the lottery unless you buy a ticket. If God wants to give you the lottery, if you want to win the lottery, you at least first have to buy the ticket. There was a joke. There's one Jewish man. Maybe I should change it to Sindhi man. I heard it. Sindhi man, he was upset that friends were winning lotteries and he wasn't winning a lottery. So he's praying to Balaji, you know, why? I also pray to you. I never win the lottery. So Balaji, he heard a voice, the clouds broke. And says, you know, he said, Harish, meet me halfway. Buy a ticket. Buy a ticket first. At least you have to do something. You have to do something. So that's our philosophy. There's three philosophies. One philosophy is everything is just by the grace of God. We have to totally surrender to God. It's called the cat philosophy. It's like the kitten. You ever see the cat? The mother cat takes the kitten in the mouth, right? The kitten is just like this. Wherever the mother goes, he's totally dependent. If the mother drops him, that's it, you know? His mother's jumping here and there. He's totally dependent. It's like we have to be totally surrendered to God. God takes care of everything. Other people say, no, it depends upon our action. Like the monkeys. The baby monkey has to hang on to the mother monkey for dear life. You know, with all 4 feet, mouth on the back of the mother, and the mother jumping from one tree to the next tree, and you know, for dear life, the mother is hanging, the baby monkey is hanging on by his own karma, his own activity. But that's not our philosophy. No, that's not our philosophy. In the philosophy of the man in the well. So, last year I heard one news report that one newly married couple, they were out in the field somewhere in North Karnataka, and the wife went home. When the husband got back, she wasn't there. Looking all over, finally they found her. She fell down a tube well. So if you fall down a well, you're walking, you fall down a hidden well, you're finished. You know, your bones are broken. You know, if nobody comes and spy, you know, you'll just die. So therefore, if somebody comes, you know, by their mercy, if they lower a rope down, that's their mercy. But unless you grab onto the rope, you're not going to get out of the well. So by the mercy of God and your effort, then there's success. So that's what it means. You have to focus your mind, then with determined effort, and if God has mercy, then you'll be successful. Even the lion, king of the jungle, not that he just lies there with his mouth open and animals run in. You know, it doesn't work that way. You have to actually do something. That was Krishna's answer to Sanjaya. It says, knowledge is not everything. Because knowledge of food won't do any good unless you actually eat the food. You actually have to do something. Knowing about food will not fill your stomach. You actually have to eat the food. And then you'll be satisfied. So both have to be there. Krishna's mercy and your action. So Krishna's given us so much mercy. He's given us Srimad Bhagavatam. He's given us Tulsi Devi. Just simply by seeing Tulsi, by touching Tulsi, by walking around Tulsi Devi, you know, we get so much mercy. The Ganga is there, Kaveri, what to speak of devotees who come, you know, Srila Papa, they give the message. Bhakti Siddhanta, his appearance day was recent. He risked his life. They tried to murder him. They wanted him dead. He was so, you know, determined. He went through so many austerities. He spent 9 years preparing for his mission. He chanted 192 rounds a day for 9 years before he took sannyas, before he opened the Gaudiya Math. So he was a pure soul already, but he did that for our benefit. We would not be sitting here if it wasn't for Bhakti Siddhanta, because he sent Prabhupada to America. And we came to Bangalore. Bangalore Temple was not started by somebody from India. Bangalore Temple was started by Farangis. That's who started the Bangalore Temple. That's who started the Calcutta Temple. That's who started Mayapur. That's who started the Mumbai Temple. That's who started the Delhi Temple. Not locals. Of course, under the direction of Srila Prabhupada. Under the direction of Srila Prabhupada. So if it wasn't for Bhakti Siddhanta, none of us would be here. So any other questions? So to answer that question, it's never going to be ideal. So you just have to accept that. You have to just focus your mind that nothing will get in your way. Nothing will stop you. You just do your prescribed duty to please Krishna. What does Krishna say? There's two verses which are repeated in the Bhagavad. There's two instructions repeated in the Bhagavad Gita. One is Man mana bhava mad bhakto. In there's two places, but there's another instruction which is repeated twice. In verse 335, Krishna explains. He says, It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duty, even though faultily. God, that's an important point. Even though you don't do it completely. It's like Jatayu. Jatayu didn't succeed. But he was very successful. He was not successful, but he was supremely successful. He was not able to defeat Ravana, but Lord Ram performed his funeral ceremony. He pleased Lord Ram. So even though faultily, he performed his duty. So, yeah, it is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties even though faultily than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty. For to follow another's path is dangerous. Well, we should. That's very clear instruction. So then what does he say? Just to make sure that we didn't forget, over there in 18th chapter, verse 47, Krishna repeats it, you know, when he's talking about Daivi Varnashram. So he says, in verse 45, he said, by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Now please hear from me how this can be done. It says, by worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings, and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. He's saying his own work. So then he says, he repeats himself. He says, it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. That's a very important part here. So, for example, Prabhupada's wife. So women have duties also. Bhagavad Gita doesn't explain about duties of women, because first of all, Arjuna knew Dharma very well, and plus Bhagavad Gita is a very small chapter in the whole Mahabharata, which gives everybody's duties in great detail. So Prabhupada's sister, she was married. Imagine if, you know, ladies, imagine if your husband was a drunkard, and they already knew he was a meat eater, and he gambled, right? Wherever money was left over, he would go to other women, go to prostitutes. Does that sound like an ideal situation? No. That'd be pretty hard, wouldn't it, huh? Most ladies would be very disturbed by that, I think. So she came to Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada was not only her brother, but he was her godbrother. She was also a person initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta. She said, what should I do? So he told her, just first get our childhood deities of Radha and Krishna. You just worship them. You pray for your husband's benefit and you serve him. Serve him. He didn't say find a good lawyer. You know, didn't say go to family counseling. Didn't say argue with him. You know, argue with a drunken man is suicide for women. It's crazy. He just beat you. More. They're drunk. You know, they're drunk. That's how the Yadus were killed. They were drunk and they beat each other to death. He said, you just pray for your husband's benefit to Radha and Krishna and you serve him. That means if he wants liquor, you serve him liquor. He wants meat, you serve me. Because why? In performing her duty, she gets no karma. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reaction. She's not doing it because she wants. She's doing it for him. He gets the reaction. Husband gets the reaction. She doesn't get the reaction. It's like Arjuna. He doesn't get the reaction for killing his grandfather. Because he's doing his duty. He's doing it out of his duty. Now if somebody else does it, they get a reaction. A Vaishnava, they get a reaction. But a Kshatriya doing it doesn't get a reaction. Somebody else doing it, they get a reaction. He would not get his reaction. So his sister did that. She served her husband. She prayed. And after some time, he saw that this woman has nothing but my best interest at heart. Because she went to the highest power. You know, she went to Radha and Krishna. He was outnumbered. It was her and her super soul and his super soul against him. He was outnumbered. 3-1. So after some time, he just realized that he began to worship his wife. Began to worship her. Material problem, spiritual solution. Because the whole world is a material problem. There's nothing but material problems. We are in a material problem. It's called the material world. And any material solution makes the problem worse. Material solution is part of the problem. That's because they never work. You know, when the automobile first came on the market in the night, like 1903, everybody was thinking, this is great, this will cut down air pollution, because in those days everybody, like in the big cities, they would have horse-drawn carriages. So naturally, horses, they also have, you know, horse manure. And the horse manure would fall on the ground, and it gets trampled on, and it gets dried out, and it gets trampled, and it turns into dust. And then what? You breathe it in. You're breathing in horse manure. Does that sound like a good thing? No. People got tuberculosis, they got this disease, that. So they thought, great. Horseless carriage, get rid of air pollution. Now what? Did we get rid of air pollution? Now it's worse. Now we have global warming. We have, you know, what's that? Ozone layer, or hole in the ozone. So many things like that. So it created bigger problems. And now, but to speak of, you know, it didn't have the horse manure wars, that they have the petroleum wars, the oil wars in Iraq. And nobody was ever fighting over horse manure, right? You ever heard of the people fighting over horses? No, but the whole, you know, how can our oil be under their soil? You know. So that's the whole problem. That's just they made a bigger problem. You know, all because of the horseless carriage. So that's just the way of material world. It's like that. So if we just do our duty, like one god sister told me a similar thing. She's an Indian Mataji. Her name was Sunita. She was one of the first Indian girls to join. She was an Agarwal from Vrindavan. The last time I spoke with her was 1995. She's passed away since then. And she shocked me by telling me that she'd been married before. And I was stunned. I thought she had always been married to the same man. She had been married to an Indian man, an Agarwal, but he wasn't a devotee. He was not a devotee. He was not following any regulated principles. So she went to Srila Prabhupada and said, what should I do? My husband, you know, he doesn't follow any regular principle. That means he wanted, you know, he wanted various things. He wanted, probably was a vegetarian, but he probably wanted, you know, illicit sex, this, that, the other thing. So what should I do? And Srila Prabhupada said, you should just do what your mother trained you to do. Serve your husband. Because she doesn't, if you serve her, she's doing her duty, her husband wants, then she does. She doesn't get the karma. You know, because she's doing her prescribed duty. There is no karma, is there? Because there's always some fault. Huh? What's the very next verse? There's always some fault. The very next verse says it. So that verse says, it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reaction. And what's the next verse? Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature. So that answers that person's question. What should you do if it's not ideal? It's never going to be. It's guaranteed. There's going to be some fault. Guaranteed. So therefore, one should not give up one's work according to one's nature, even if such work is full of fault. Krishna already knew. There's the answer. We do it anyway. We don't give up. We have to fight. If we give up, we lose. As soon as you give up, you lose the war. But you keep fighting. If you keep fighting against Maya, eventually you win. Right? Eventually you win. And then when I was in high school, I had one friend, much older than me, he used to play chess. And he used to
He beat me so many times, 10 times in a row, 20 times in a row. But I kept playing with him, because I knew if I played with him long enough, I would learn his game. And sure enough, after, I don't know, 40 games, I understood. Then I beat him. One game, five, 10. And after 20 games, he didn't want to play with me anymore. Because if I had given up, that would be it. So Maya is like that. You just have to be so persistent that she doesn't want to play with you anymore. Because you don't give up. You might lose a battle, but you don't lose the war. But if you give up, you're finished. You are finished. And that means 10 million lifetimes from now, you'll still be here. 10 million Brahmandas from now, you'll still be here. You like it so much? So you have to fight. There's no other choice. I remember I was reading in the Iliad. They were the Greeks and the Trojans were fighting over the body of Patrocles, and the Greeks were losing. And I can't remember who it was. One of the Greek heroes said that if we turn our backs, death is certain, because they'll stab you in the back. Survival only is by going forward. Some of us may die, but that's the only way to survive, is by going forward and fighting. There's no other alternative. We fight, we might die, but that's the only way to survive. But if you turn your back, it's instant death. So we have to fight. There's no other choice. You don't have a choice. The only other choice is samsara. It was so nice. Right? I have a relationship. You know, that's the problem. But that's what the problem the ladies have is that ladies are very much into relationships. They even have a relationship with Maya. It's so nice. I don't want to go and hurt her feelings. You know, how can I just break up without having to hurt anybody's feelings? You know, well, you have to become totally detached. Totally detached. Any other questions? Yeah.
Among the 10 offenses of a Vaishnava, mm-hmm. it has been written that Brahma and Shiva their name should not be taken with Lord Vishnu, and they are not independent of Lord Vishnu.
Yeah.
So I am in a confusion that if they are neither same nor different from Lord Vishnu, then who are they?
Well, my question is, how is that related to this class? Srila Prabhupada was very specific that questions should be concerning the topic of the class. So you can ask that later to somebody else. If you listen to Prabhupada lectures, he was very insistent that questions should be according to the class topic. Imagine if you were in some lecture in university and you're in calculus class and you bring up a question about biology that the professor would not appreciate. He would say, go to the biology class, you know. Like that. Any other questions? Yeah, speak into the mic, please.
My question is...
Does it work? Turn it on.
Hello?
Yeah. Then you speak, stand up and please speak a little loud. Does it work? Okay, now it works.
The question is, when anybody will realize that, okay, I have met my guru.
You have a what?
I have met my guru.
You have met your guru?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then, what are the symbols or what are the signals that...
Oh, what is the, when do you know who your guru is that you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Oh. When you become sincere, that verse, Lord Chaitanya says, Amanda Kone Bhagyavanjit, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. The living entity is wandering from one Brahmanda to the next. But that living entity who is Bhagyavan, who is fortunate, then Krishna will send him a guru, and that guru will plant in his heart the creeper of devotion.
So in that purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada explained that fortunate means, Bhagyavan means sincere. That the person is sincere. You can't cheat Krishna. Krishna's in your heart. He'll know when the disciple is ready, the guru will appear. So when you become sincere, then Krishna will send you appropriate guru. But if you're not sincere, you know, hundreds of gurus may appear and it won't be very good for you. You won't even notice. You won't know. Because the disciple has to be very sincere. Like in the case of Ramanuja. Ramanuja, he was learning from all the different, his senior godbrothers. Because he was, all his godbrothers, the senior disciples of Yamunacharya, knew that Yamunacharya wanted Ramanuja to be not only his disciple, but to be the next Acharya. So they knew that. But unfortunately, though they accepted each other, they didn't meet, and there was no initiation. It's a long story. But so their plan was that each of the senior disciples of Yamunacharya would teach him their speciality. One was a specialist in Divya Prabandha. One was a specialist in Charama Shloka. One was a specialist in Ashtaksharam Nam, you know, Ashtaksharam Mantra. Like this. And so each of them tutored him, and then he knew more than anybody put together. So when he had to go learn Ashtaksharam Nam, he had to go Ashtakshara Mantra, he had to go all the way, he had to walk 75 miles there and 75 miles back to one temple from Srivanga to go see Goshtipurna. It was 120 kilometers there, 120 kilometers back. So he went there, he knocked on the door and he asked, who is it? Says, I think he called himself Ramanujacharya, but he says, you know, Tridandi Bhikshu Ramanuja, like that, you know. And so he said, you're not ready, go home. So he went back. And so then after some time he went again. He said, who is it? Tridandi Bhikshu Ramanuja. He says, go back, you're not ready yet. So this went on 17 times. He walked there and back 17 times. So what's 17 times 240? That's a lot of kilometers he walked. So finally, Ramanuja was getting very disturbed. And he had a very sore feet walking so far, back and forth. So then finally, the godbrothers of Goshtipurna told him, you know, like, give him a break. You know, So then finally, he called for him again. So Ramanuja went and he knocked on the door and he said, who is that? Says Dasanudas, Tridandi Bhikshu, Ramanuja. Says, oh, now you're ready. You become humble. Dasamudas, servant of the servant. Then he accepted it as his disciple. So he had the sincerity, very sincere. In fact, when Bhaktisiddhanta was refused, he asked, told Bhaktisiddhanta, you should take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, no, I won't. So then Bhaktisiddhanta was insistent. And he said, well, if Mahaprabhu says, then I'll accept you. So then, next time Bhaktisiddhanta met him, says, so what did Mahaprabhu say? He says, I forgot to ask. I forgot to ask Mahaprabhu. So he's going back and forth. And so then, Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, no. So then Bhaktisiddhanta said, I felt like Ramanuja after being refused 17 times. But then he cried. He just cried and he said, I'm going to commit suicide. But then Gaurakishore Das Babaji, because he was weeping, he was crying, he was going to jump into the river. Then he accepted him as his only disciple. So sincere desire has to be there. It's not just rubber stamping, having a guru as a fashion. Because you have to, when you meet somebody who you know you can surrender your life to, that's your guru. But if you want my godbrother, anybody knows Atmatattva? So he was telling me how he accepted Srila Prabhupada. And I think it was somewhere in North India. And he came, the devotees, they were having Guru Puja. And Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan. And he's singing, that singing, you know, Sri Guru Charanapadma. And this is his Prabhupada's, he's noticed, Prabhupada's also chanting the same mantra. So, okay, he's chanting, he's singing for his own praise. He's astounded, you know. And I said, wow, he said, okay, why is Prabhupada chanting this? No, he's not chanting, he's doing puja to his guru. He says, oh, then he accepted Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada is not accepting praise from himself. He is worshipping his Guru Maharaj. Bhakti Siddhanta. Because he's just seeing himself as the humble servant of Bhakti Siddhanta. Then, that person, and that's why we accepted Prabhupada. We accepted Prabhupada because he just saw himself as a servant, not as a master. He was only a servant. And he was always saying how his disciple Bhakti Siddhanta has sent you all to help me. And he was very happy. He wrote to Subal how Subal was distributing BTGs in Philadelphia. So he didn't say I'm happy. He says my Guru Maharaj is happy that you are distributing these literatures. So Prabhupada was happy. Why? Because my guru was happy. My guru was happy because you were helping me. So if you meet somebody who you feel is the servant of his guru, and then who has surrendered his life to his guru, then that could be a good candidate if you can surrender your life to him completely. Srila Prabhupada, he said, the only people praise me, I've done miracles. The only thing, if I have any credit, is that I did not deviate from the order of my guru. I did not add or subtract. I did not change. That's when you'll know. When you meet somebody who you know you can give your life to, then you'll know. Until then. Until then, keep shopping. And also, or become more sincere. You know? Also, the kind of thing, like, you can shop all you want, but you haven't got any money. It's window shopping, no money. Until, when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. Until then, nothing happens. Any other questions? Alright. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai. Our verse number 1.